Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears on WWGH 107.1 FM. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears live and coming at you here on Getaway Friday, July the 2nd, 2021, 16 minutes past the hour. And this morning, it really is one of those mornings, whatever you're doing, just throw your radio dial out the window. Don't change this dial today at any point during our live broadcast because from 8 a.m. until 11 a.m. this morning, we are doing something that has never been done on radio anywhere, and certainly not in Marion. Clearly, anybody who knows anything about Marion or Marion history knows that the two most important figures in Marion history, by the way, the only two people who have schools named after them in Marion are Mary Ellen Withrow and President Warren G. Harding. Now you're saying, well, you can't have these two people as guests in your studio, but through the magic of radio, we can do that. And for the first time here this morning, we have Warren G. Harding and 40th Treasurer of the United States, Mary Ellen Withrow. Thank you both for coming in this morning.
You're welcome.
Thank you, President.
This is a total honor to be here today. Thank you for including me.
Yep. Just if you want to pull the mic a little closer there, we want to make sure to hear you, President. Mary Ellen, I want to start off with you this morning. This Independence Day coming up on Sunday, what has Independence Day meant to you over the years?
Well, it means that we've got a wonderful country that we've been able to work with all these years, and I'm just very proud of it. And I think about that on the 4th of July.
President Harding, what do you think about?
Well, what's astounding to me is what a great experiment the founding of this nation was, and the interrelationships among the founding fathers, and the way the personalities worked, greatly shaped who we would become as a nation. Anybody who knows me well knows that my political hero is Alexander Hamilton, who's not a top-of-mind figure in the founding of America, not like George Washington and Thomas Jefferson and those figures. But he played an outsized role in the shaping of who we are as a nation, as is seen in the Constitution. And we may have a chance to talk a bit about that later in the show.
Absolutely. Why is that your hero?
He had strong beliefs in the formation of a federal government. Others among the founding group believed more strongly in states' rights, looking more to create a nation modeled more like Europe. After all, that's what most of them were familiar with, that states would be individual entities, perhaps sovereign entities, and that they would cooperate much as European nations do. But Alexander Hamilton came to the forefront of proposing and defending the idea of a federal government that united the states and would be able to provide services that the states would not be able to do individually for themselves. He was a dissenting opinion, because the political tide at the time among many of the founding fathers was the states would reign supreme.
Mary Ellen, did you ever have a political hero when you were growing up?
Yes, FDR.
FDR.
Yeah.
I watched a great documentary that Ken Burns did on him recently. Well, it's part of the whole Roosevelt series.
Mm-hmm.
What was it about FDR that appealed to you?
Well, his way of handling everything and his ideas of the government getting it out of the trouble that Hoover had gotten us in, and then how he handled the war. He didn't want to get into the war right away, but then he had to, of course, after the Japanese attacked us, which was the only thing he could do. But he was a wonderful president.
When we look back at those founding fathers, a lot of which became presidents, do you have one that sticks out in your mind of the George Washingtons, John Adams, Thomas Jefferson, Ben Franklin group? Was there a favorite?
Jefferson. Mm-hmm.
People seem to really flock to him. Why do you think he had such great importance?
Well, I don't know. It was his history, and he seemed to be tremendously smart. I mean, he just could do all sorts of things. And yes, I admired him.
President Harding, of that early group, is there one that sticks out to you?
Well, absolutely. Alexander Hamilton is the one that very much comes to mind, because he, nearly alone, was able to persuade the other founders in that group to line up with his way of thinking, and seeing the value of creating a strong federal presence that worked with the states and was able to provide protection for states in ways that they couldn't protect themselves.
Ben Franklin, through some of his writings, we have learned that he did wonder if years from now Americans would understand what they went through to come up with this country. The not just so much the war, which I think people think about, but the form of government and going overseas to earn representation in other countries. Would they understand what these freedoms are all about? Over 200 years later, Mary Ellen, do you think that Americans today, as we head into this big weekend, understand what those men went through?
I think we try, but how could you ever know what it was like? You know, when you mention Ben Franklin, I think about the money that he designed back in the very beginning. I have some of those in my possession, and he was a fascinating man too. Yeah.
And Ben Franklin, as many say, would have most likely been considered for president or become president. It was just his age that worked against him.
Yeah.
He was not really contemporaries of those other gentlemen. They were in their 40s, and mm-hmm. he was 60-something or so. President Harding, what do you make of Ben Franklin? Do you think that people are, in your time of the 1920s, do you think people understand what those guys went through?
No. And you got to understand that the American Revolution, the formation of the Constitution, happened only 87 years before I was born, which was fairly recent history for me and my family and my generation. And even at that, with only less than 90 years having passed, I don't believe people understood the sacrifices that these leaders had to make to stand up for what they believed in, because they took a tremendous amount of criticism from every direction, from people who had far different ideas about how this nation should be assembled.
Now, we've been shooting fireworks off in this country on the 4th of July, well, really since 1777. What do you make of this tie-in with fireworks and the 4th of July?
Well, fireworks don't... They don't represent munitions. They don't represent armaments. They represent celebration. Even though they both use gunpowder. But it's the grand spectacle that fireworks present that provides awe, inspiration for people, and it's certainly an appropriate type of observance for the 4th of July.
Now, Mary Ellen, in our time, here in 2021, the governor is about to make a decision on fireworks here in Ohio. Should they be legal on certain days, not all holidays, but certain days of the year? And this has become a big issue down in Columbus. What's your feeling? Should fireworks be made legal on those days?
Yes, I think so. I was on the fireworks board.
That sounds like fun.
It was very interesting, I'll tell you. It was something that, I was also involved with the Girl Scouts, and I called the head person. I said, you know, I think we ought to have a badge for fireworks. And they didn't like that idea. But there's so much history to the what they're called, like the chrysanthemum and I don't know what some of the others are, but they get better every year, you know. They're really, I just love them. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I watch them on TV usually.
That's right. I do want to touch just on a few things. We'd be remiss if we didn't. It was a very big week for news. The last 24 hours have been very big for news in this country. So Mary Ellen, I'll come to you on this. The Trump Organization gets indicted, and so does their chief financial officer. What have you made of this? I don't know that this has ever happened to a former living president.
Well, probably not that we know of. It's been, I've been listening to it and wondering what's going to happen, I think, you know.
Are you surprised by it?
No, I'm not surprised. I'm watching them talk about doing this for months, and so they're working on it.
Somebody told me once that to see a former president be indicted, and he wasn't himself indicted, but to see a former president indicted, that the country would not stand for that. They would not like that. But it could happen, as my understanding is, in this particular situation. Do you think the country could stand to see that happen if it should happen down the road?
It's hard to know what would happen because of the strong following that he has. I think that's an issue here that we would never have thought it would be like that.
And since we also spoke last, Jim Renacci got into the governor's race.
Yes.
He's, since 1938, I believe, a sitting governor in Ohio has never been primaried.
Really?
1938.
Yeah.
Well, Governor DeWine's going to be primaried. Why do you think that, and you know Governor DeWine.
Yes.
Why has this happened?
Well, they see an opportunity. If Renacci saw an opportunity to defeat DeWine, then he decides to run.
Speaking of the former president, what did you make of the fact he did a rally, President Trump did a rally here in Ohio, Renacci was there, but DeWine opted not to go?
Mm-hmm. Jim Jordan was there, too.
Jim Jordan was there. Our congressman was there. Yes, he was. He was there out front. Do you think this could really spell trouble for Mike DeWine, knowing how much the state went for Trump in the last election?
You know, it's hard to judge that. I don't know. I've been surprised quite a few times in the last 4 years.
Nan Whaley was on with us again yesterday, the Democratic candidate, one of the Democratic candidates, certainly front runner, I think we'd say at this point.
Mm-hmm.
But, and you know, being a female in politics, a pioneer in female politics, is it going to be more difficult for her simply because she's a woman? We've never had a female governor.
I don't know. She's a strong individual, and she's got a lot of experience from things that have happened in Dayton. I think she'll be a really good candidate, and who knows if she's going to have a rough time because she's a woman. I think we're trying to get rid of that perception, but we'll see.
But do you think that Hillary Clinton factor will be there of how is her how does her hair look, how is she dressed, that men don't seem to go through?
No, they don't. That's just natural. Women probably pay more attention to that than men do. And you think, you would think women would get the woman vote. And so many times they don't.
And the final current event I wanted to touch on was Vax-a-Million has ended. It has come to a close. And last time, and here's the evolution. If you haven't been listening to the show, Mary Ellen said in the beginning she was skeptical of it, but okay with it. And then when he Skyped the people into his press conference, you weren't so happy with it.
That's right.
Then after that, he showed up on their doorstep.
Yes, right.
What did you make of a governor showing up on somebody's doorstep to tell them they want a million, just over here in Union County?
Yes, well, I didn't think it was a great idea for him to do that. Well, just let me ask this. What was the results of that? Did they get a lot of people vaccinated because of that, or did they not?
It's my understanding. See, the numbers are funny, and people are only releasing what they want.
Yeah.
But we were in the overall lower 40% when it started, and I think we're approaching mid 40% right now. So that's the change.
Yeah, just about half a... About 5%?
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe if we're lucky.
Well, there's five happy people, and there's a lot of people that aren't so happy, I imagine.
Well, and just overall here, President Biden had to say he's not going to meet his goal of 70%, nowhere near that in the country.
Yeah.
We certainly aren't getting there in Ohio. What is going on, in your opinion?
I don't know. They were talking about Missouri this morning, that they've had a big surge, and in fact, more than anybody else in the country. And they were saying they thought maybe it was the Delta happening there.
Do you think that here in Ohio, that looking back on it now, because it is over, Vax-a-Million was a political move by the governor?
Mm-hmm. It was, yeah.
When it comes to something this serious, you know, I understand everybody wants to be reelected, but should you do that? Spend $5 million of federal money?
I was shocked. I will tell you, it shocked me when he announced that. I thought, my gosh, why don't you just do 20,000 and do about 50 people?
It would have made him just as happy.
Yeah, right.
So at this point, what is your feeling? Because I know you have praised Mike DeWine's handling of the...
I thought he did well before that, and then that just, I just didn't care for that.
If the election were held today, do you think he'd be reelected?
I don't know. I haven't heard any polls or anything. Of course, it's too early. I don't know because, you know, they said the Democrats are more in favor of him than the Republicans are. And he just hasn't gotten along with his legislature at all, which is not good. That would be against him. And then we've got a woman running for the first time, and that might make a difference there. And Renacci, I don't know how strong Renacci is.
I think what people would say, he's got a lot of money, I believe over $300 million. He does have the support.
Oh, my goodness.
Of, he's got a little bit of money.
That scares me to death.
A little drop of money there.
$300 million.
$300 million.
Yeah, that's about the 1921 federal treasury.
Is that what? Yeah, the whole thing. Now, how much did you spend, President Harding, when you ran? $300 million?
No. But it was substantial. It was $8.1 million was raised during the course of my campaign. My opponent, Governor Cox, was able to raise just a tiny fraction of that. Really kind of a paltry sum by comparison.
Mary Ellen, I wanted to touch on this before we move back to Independence Day things, because I got a lot of feedback on this. Last time you were on the show, we were talking about the city auditor, and you had said that you think he should resign. And since then, he wasn't answering questions that the special committee were asking him here in Marion. So now it has been turned over to the state, and we will just see what happens. Do you still think he should resign, and what do you make of this being turned over to the state?
Well, I think it's fine that it's turned over to the state. Let them decide.
Do you think he should go at the end of this, or even now?
Well, from what he did, I think he should resign. I've said that.
Yeah. Is there a main reason that you think he should resign?
Well, yes. He's not capable for the job. If you're sending a check that size to the wrong department and then you don't have control over your credit card in your office, I mean, right there. There's two big things that he did that are really, I don't understand how they could happen.
Mm. President Harding, we were talking about women there. Your election was the first election where women had the right to vote. What part do you think women played in your election, being elected president?
It played a massive role in my election. Women were everywhere, were excited about the opportunity to vote, were encouraging each other in many ways, and there was a pent-up demand, a pent-up urgency developing for women to vote that I think empowered them to show up at the polls.
Do want to give the listening audience an idea of what's going to happen before 11 a.m. this morning. I believe it will be in the 10 o'clock hour. Mary Ellen Withrow is going to do something very special. We've done this one other time, but we did it at the fair, and I'm not really sure with all the noise of the fair how well it came through. So we're going to do it in the studio today. She's going to read the Declaration of Independence live during the 10 o'clock hour. So stay tuned for that. Now, this is very important because this is the document that we celebrate on July the 4th, and this is the document. Just as its name, the Declaration of Independence that gave us freedom. So Mary Ellen will read that coming up between 10 and 11 this morning. Also, a lot of people don't remember that Mary Ellen, when she was running for office, used to hand out recipe cards. Mm-hmm. And a big part of this holiday, there they are, perfect. And a big part of this holiday coming up on Sunday is food. So we're going to share some recipes here, and maybe President Harding can tell us some of his favorite foods when he was in the White House. Okay. And also, President Harding has prepared a speech for every hour this morning in regard to patriotism. So that will be going on. And we also, because it's a big weekend and people have a three-day weekend coming off, we do have some things to give away. And let's start here because we haven't done it. Then we're going to go to President Harding's speech so we get it in here in hour number one. 40 minutes past the hour. We have a pair of tickets to Zumbezi Bay. Here's how we're going to do it. We have two pairs of tickets to Zumbezi Bay. We have a pair of tickets to the Columbus Zoo. And we have three tickets to the Ohio State Fair. So, like we've done in the past, if you answer a trivia question right, we'll put you in a drawing. And this morning, before Mary Ellen and the former president leave at 11 o'clock, we will draw the winners. That's how we'll do it. So here's the first question. Get ready. Where was the first celebration of Independence Day held? And I'm looking for a city. Where was the first celebration of Independence Day held? And I'm looking for a city. 740-383-9944. Where was the first celebration of Independence Day held? And while we wait for that answer, Mary Ellen, we've talked about it before, but what's it like to have schools named for you in this area?
Well, I never thought that would happen. It's a thrill, and I'm very proud of what they're doing too. They're getting young people into the department that they want to be in for their life, and I think that's great.
Apparently, I said state fair, local fair is what tickets we're giving away.
Okay.
I just got corrected by somebody.
Oh.
Go ahead, caller.
Was it Philadelphia?
It was Philadelphia. Okay. You do have it. That's where the first one was. What's your name, sir?
This is Ryan.
Oh, Ryan, how you doing this morning?
Doing pretty good. How are you guys doing?
Good. Now, how did the president and Mary Ellen sound?
Pretty good.
Good.
I'm enjoying the conversation.
You know, this is historic, Ryan.
Yes. This is definitely historic. I mean, very rare do you get a talk to President Harding.
Yeah, that's right. And Mary Ellen, the two people who have schools named after him here.
Yes, this is very, this is important stuff now.
I know. Now stay tuned. Are you at work this morning, Ryan?
Yes, I am.
Okay, don't get fired.
Okay.
Thanks, Ryan. Bye-bye.
All right, see ya.
So Ryan's in, and we'll have some more trivia questions, but I do want to turn to President Harding so we get the... tell us about what speech we're going to go into here, President.
Well, coming up later this year, it'll be in November of 1921, I will be presiding over the dedication of the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier at Arlington National Cemetery. It's going to be a vastly important occasion, which is why I'm working on my presentation now. Because I want to be able to truly finesse it and deliver a speech that's inspiring and powerful. I have a rough draft of that speech. I've been working on this for a while, and I'd be happy to share that with you now, and interested to hear of any improvements you think could be made to it to make it more effective. Imagine where we are. We're at Arlington National Cemetery in Washington, behind the Lincoln Memorial, which is under construction right now, as is the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier. It's under construction right now. It's being being built next to the new amphitheater, which was just constructed last year. Just by way of history, just to remember that where Arlington National Cemetery came from, it was the estate of Robert E. Lee and Mary Lee that was seized by the federal government and then turned into a burial ground. But as far as this presentation is concerned, let me imagine we're gathered around the brand new Tomb of the Unknown Soldier, adjacent to the new amphitheater. You can see the Washington Monument in the distance. We've got perhaps 90,000 people gathered, as far as you can see. And I'm honored to preside over this important occasion. And here are what I'm suggesting is remarks I might be making at that time. Ladies and gentlemen, we are here today to pay the most impersonal of tributes. The name of him whose body lies before us took flight with his imperishable soul. We know not whence he came, but only that his death marks him with the everlasting glory of an American dying for his country. He might have come from any one of millions of American homes. Some mother gave him in her love and tenderness, and with him her most cherished hopes. Hundreds of mothers are wondering today, finding a touch of solace in the possibility that the nation bows in grief over the body of the one she bore to live and die, if need be, for our republic. For in this body there once glowed the soul of an American, with the aspirations and ambitions of a citizen who cherished life and its opportunities. He may have been a native, perhaps an adopted son. That matters little, because they glorified the same loyalty. They sacrificed alike. We do not know the eminence of his birth, but we do know the glory of his death. He died for his country, and greater devotion hath no man than this. He died unquestioning, uncomplaining, with faith in his heart and hope on his lips, that his country should triumph and its civilization survive. As a typical soldier of this representative democracy, he fought and died, believing in the indisputable justice of his country's cause, conscious of the world's upheaval, appraising the magnitude of a war, the like of which had never horrified humanity before. Perhaps he believed his to be of service, to be destined to change the tide of human affairs. But in the death gloom of gas, the bursting of shells, the rain of bullets, men face more intimately the great God over all. Within the din of battle, the glow of conflict, and the supreme trial of courage, they came involuntarily, the hurried appraisal of life and the contemplation of death's great mystery. On the threshold of eternity, many a soldier wonders how his ebbing blood could color the stream of human life, flowing on after his sacrifice. Indeed, I revere that citizen whose confidence in the righteousness of his country inspired belief that its triumph is the victory of humanity. This American soldier went forth to battle with no hatred for any people of the world, but hating war and hating the purpose of every war for conquest, he cherished our national rights. And in the maelstrom of destruction and suffering and death, he fired his shot for liberation of the captive conscience of the world. On such an occasion as this, amid such a scene, our thoughts alternate between defenders living and defenders dead. A grateful republic will be worthy of them both. Our part is to atone for the losses of a heroic dead by making a better republic for the living. Sleeping in these hallowed grounds of Arlington Cemetery are thousands of Americans who have given their blood for the baptism of freedom and its maintenance, a country better and nobler for their deeds. Burial here is rather more than a sign of the nation's favor. It's a suggestion of a tomb in the heart of the nation, sorrowing for its noble dead. Today's ceremonies proclaim that the hero unknown is not unhonored. We gather him to the nation's breast, within the shadow of the Capitol, within the shadow of the towering shaft that honors Washington, the great father of our nation, and the exquisite monument now under construction to Lincoln, the martyred emancipator. Here, the inspirations of yesterday and the conscience of today forever unite to make the republic worthy of his death for our flag and country. Ours are lofty resolutions today, for with tribute to the dead, we consecrate ourselves to a better order for the living. With all my heart, I wish we might say to the defenders who survive, to mothers who sorrow, to widows and children who mourn, that no such sacrifice shall ever be asked again. It was my fortune recently to see a demonstration of modern warfare. It's no longer a conflict in chivalry. It's no more a test of valiant manhood. It's only cruel, deliberate, scientific destruction. In this demonstration, there was no enemy, only the theoretical defense of some hypothetic objective. But the attack was made with all the relentless methods of modern destruction. There was the rain of ruin from aircraft, the thunder of artillery, followed by the unspeakable devastation wrought by bursting shells, mortars belching their bombs of desolation, machine guns concentrating their storms of lead. There was the infantry advancing, firing, falling. The flying missiles were revealed by illuminating tracer bullets so that we could note their flight and appraise their deadliness. The air was streaked with tiny flames marking the flight of mass destruction. As this panorama of unutterable destruction visualized the horrors of modern warfare, there grew on me the sense of the failure of a civilization which can leave its problems to such a cruel conclusion. Surely, no one in responsible authority could ask the entire manhood of a kingdom, empire, or republic to make that kind of sacrifice. Until all reason had failed, until appeal to justice through understanding had been denied, until every effort of love and consideration for fellow man had been exhausted, until freedom itself and inviolate honor had been brutally threatened. I speak not as a pacifist fearing war, but as one who loves justice. I speak as one who believes the highest function of government is to give its citizens the security of peace, the opportunity to achieve, and the pursuit of happiness. The loftiest tribute we can bestow today is the commitment of this republic to an advancement never made before, to put mankind on a higher plane, with war's tragedies barred from the stage of righteous civilization, where reason and righteousness shall prevail. Standing today on this hallowed ground, it's fitting to say that his sacrifice and that of the millions dead shall not be in vain. There must be, there shall be, the commanding voice of a conscious civilization against armed warfare. As we return this poor clay to its mother's soil, garlanded by love and decorated in ways that only nations can bestow, the prayers of our people, of all peoples, shall mark the beginning of a new and lasting era of peace on earth and goodwill among men. Let me join in that prayer. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, and the power, and the glory, forever. Amen.
Thank you, President Harding. Very, very, very good speech. When you hear that speech, Mary Ellen, which was from the 1920s, what does it make you think about?
Well, it was a very good speech. I think that ending with the Lord's Prayer was great. You know, I don't remember the current president's giving a speech at the Arlington, you know, so I was kind of surprised he gave that long a speech. Maybe it's changed over the years, but I don't think they give a speech anymore, do they?
I don't believe they do.
Yeah, yeah.
This is what I just gave as an excerpt of a speech that probably would be around 45 minutes to an hour long.
That's very interesting. Yeah. We're going to come to Mary Ellen here in a second for an update on her museum, as lots of things are going on there, and we want to know about those. But here's one more trivia question before we're up this hour. We've got about 5 minutes left. Every Independence Day, how many times does the Liberty Bell ring? Does anybody know that? Every Independence Day, how many times does the Liberty Bell ring? 740-383-9944. And again, you can win tickets to Zumbezi Bay, the Columbus Zoo, or the Marion County Fair. I said State Fair earlier. It's the Marion County Fair. And we will draw those this morning right before 11 o'clock when Mary Ellen and the President leave. And the Declaration of Independence will be read by Mary Ellen Withrow between 10 a.m. and 11 a.m. this morning. We're going to do recipes. President Harding has a couple more speeches, so we're going to have a lot of fun here. But the question is, every Independence Day, how many times does the Liberty Bell ring? 740-383-9944. Mary Ellen, what's going on with the museum?
Well, it's all packed, ready to go. And we're just waiting on the information from the Historical Society on how we go about that. But it's all packed up.
Now, for years, it's been housed at Primrose, and it will end up at the Historical Society.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
That'll be great. What does it make you think about that this will end up at the Marion County Historical Society?
Oh, I'm looking forward to it. I want school children to be able to visit, and that wasn't possible at Primrose. So, you know, school children need to see what went on in the past.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Go ahead, caller.
13.
You're exact. Now, Bob, do you know why it's 13?
Yeah.
13, yeah.
Do you know why it's 13?
Because of the colonies.
Because of the colonies. Yep, you've got it right. Bob, you are in the competition this morning. Thank you.
Yep.
All right, Bob got it. Now, Mary Ellen, I didn't know that this morning before.
No.
Before I read that question.
I thought maybe it was 50.
Yeah. Well, and the Liberty Bell is such a unique... Does anybody know why the Liberty Bell? Why a cracked bell?
I don't know, but I remember I was in a taxi and we were going by and I said, stop, I want to get out and look at it.
See the Liberty Bell, yeah. I just got to it this past March, first time
right?
I had seen
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah.
President Harding, do you know why the Liberty Bell, the cracked Liberty Bell, is our symbol?
Well, in one year, somebody told me that in one year they rang it 1,776 times. And that's the year it cracked.
Oh, really?
Is that a true story?
Well, I'm not so sure it's a true story, but it's a story worth telling anyway.
That's a good story. Well, so many people have brought this up, and I started to question it after a while. It's our symbol, but why cracked? Why a cracked bell?
Well, they didn't get a good enough job.
I guess not. We didn't finish that one up like we should have. Mary Ellen, what are some, well, we're not going to go in, we don't have enough time here, we've got about 90 seconds, but what are some of your favorite things to eat at picnics, 4th of July events?
Well, I like potato salad. I like all the ordinary things, baked beans and I brought some of my recipes. You know, I passed out recipes when I ran for office, and a couple of my opponents made fun of me, but believe me, everybody saves recipes.
Absolutely.
Yes. Well, I've got some gumdrop bars here that I like to make, and you're asking me my favorites. Oh, I love Divinity. Divinity. Candy.
Yeah. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And we are going to get to those next hour. Yeah. So you're going to hear these recipes, folks. Get a pen and paper ready, and you'll be able to get Mary. Now, these are your recipes, right, Mary Ellen?
Yeah, these are from my family.
Right, not Betty Crocker or any of that.
No, it's all mine.
These are personal recipes, so you're going to hear them here this morning. Before we go to break, President Harding, what type of food do you like at a good cookout?
Ooh, well, I'm a vigorous eater, as you can tell by my boyish figure. Actually, my favorite food isn't a barbecue food. It's chicken pot pie.
Chicken pot pie.
Yes, I will go great lengths for a good chicken pot pie. The other thing, which is a point of great discussion, is Mrs. Harding's waffles.
Really? Mm-hmm. Well, you know, maybe we'll hear some more about that in the next hour. We're going to take a 15-minute break, come back with Mary Ellen Withrow and Warren G. Harding, and if you can figure out how we're doing that this morning, you are a lucky person. First time ever. Be back in 15 minutes.
The weather's fantastic, so we get the news. You know, I could go on and on and on, but that's it. I love things that are topical and that are kind of true.
to legendary actress and the voice of Ursula from The Little Mermaid, Pat Carroll.
What would we do without gossip, for heaven's sake? Oh,